Dylan LeBlanc is our guest today with songs from his third album, Cautionary Tale. It's kind of a comeback or rebirth for him, which is interesting when you realize that he put out his first album not so long ago in 2010. The singer, whose father was a professional country music songwriter for Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, has gone through some personal growth that he is more than willing to talk about today. We'll do that after he and his band do this version of the title track of Cautionary Tale. There's a song you've probably heard more than once on the World Cafe. That's the title track of Dylan LeBlanc's third album, Cautionary Tale. And we're really happy that you brought this this band in here today. You made this record with a couple of your neighbors now that you're living down near Muscle Shoals with John Paul White and Ben Tanner.
Yep.
And the first two records were on Rough Trade and were kind of a different experience. Can you talk a little bit about coming home? I know you spent part of your childhood in Muscle Shoals and the effect that had and how it made you feel.
Well, when I first moved to Muscle Shoals, I was 10, and it was exciting at first because it was a new place, and you know, when you're 10, I didn't realize that it doesn't really click with you that you're leaving your family behind.
Where had you been living before?
I had been in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
And by that point, it didn't click with me that, you know, I was not going to see my family like I had been, like, you know, my grandmother and my aunts and stuff and my cousins. And I was excited. And then, you know, a couple of months went by. And at that time, you know, there was not much going on. And when you're young in that town, the only thing to do is play baseball and sports. And I wasn't good at any of that. And so I just mostly sat around, you know, playing my guitar and just hanging out at home. And I was always grounded also for bad grades, so that was another reason why I sat in my room quite a bit. And Muscle Shoals was a small town, you know, way smaller than the town I had been living in, which was a town of, you know, 150,000 people, you know, so it was a metropolitan area. And so at first I didn't like it, I'm not gonna lie, you know. The only thing I loved about it was the music and was the influential people that were walking around, and that when I got into that part of it, I started to really enjoy it.
Well, you had an in because your dad did a lot of sessions for his songs and other people's songs at Muscle Shoals.
Yeah, he was a staff songwriter at Fame. I don't think they do that anymore. But for 15 years, he wrote for the mainstream country scene under Fame Publishing. And that was his gig, and he would build his demos there in the studio, and he'd have other people come in and build demos with him, and I got to be around for a lot of that, which was interesting, you know, and I got to watch how people recorded and the technique of recording, and I was always fascinated with it, and I paid pretty close attention, you know, most of the time. And mostly I was a fly on the wall,
right?
You know, until I started writing my own songs, but I was, you know, I was told to stay kind of out of the way. You know, it's not a playground. You know, when you're a kid, you know, so I would usually, you know, do my homework upstairs in the little room up there. Then I would come down when I did my homework. I would come down and finish, you know, watching the sessions and hanging out and trying to get some. Any little bit I could from somebody, you know, who was in there.
So the whole idea that could be something you would do with your life, I guess that was set really early on.
It was. I never had a problem knowing what I wanted to do. You know how some people,
oh yeah,
they don't know what they want to do. They're like, what am I going to do in college? And I dropped out of high school, and I mean, I just wanted to play music. That was all I ever wanted to do, you know, and so I never had that problem, which I'm grateful for.
We're talking Southern Alabama with Dylan LeBlanc, who's our guest here today. And he's got a wonderful new album called Cautionary Tales. And you want to do another one?
Absolutely. I just want to do Easy Way Out. And we're not going to do the breakdown.
Thank you. said I'd soon be dead or soon feeling better with love. Said Lala has been down. Taking longer than you.
Another one from Cautionary Tale, Dylan LeBlanc, playing live in our studios. That's Easy Way Out. It's a dangerous path. No one knows it like I do. That sounds like self-advice.
Yes, it is. It is, definitely.
A lot of, I don't know, you tell me, is it more so than the other two records, a lot of kind of personal things on this record?
This record is mostly about waking up. And trying to become a little bit more of a conscious person, you know. And obviously that doesn't happen overnight. But I kind of snapped at the end of 2012. After all the touring and after all the, really 2013, I guess. But after Popper's Field had come out, my first record. And, I was very young and I was very naive. And I didn't know what was required of me and to make something like that happen. And it was a lot of work, which work is obviously the dirtiest, you know, four-letter word in the English language. And so when I figured that out, I started to not enjoy it so much. But I had all this anxiety and all this depression and all these things. And I was touring by myself a lot because we just couldn't afford to bring a band out at that time. And I wasn't selling many records and, you know, it wasn't very successful at radio. And, you know, mostly it was more successful in Europe and it cost a lot of money to get over to Europe. So it was just all these things and I needed something different. I needed something new. You know, I was drinking way too much, but nobody could have told me that, you know, and I couldn't have heard that, you know. I was acting out quite a bit. Just people started to back away from me. Last year, I had this really, like, serious phone call with my sister, and she said, you know, something happened. I don't know what happened, but she was crying, and I love my sister, and we were, like, really, you know, we're really good friends, but she was, you know, she said, I just don't want to see, everybody's going to have to back away from you. And it's going to, you know, it's going to hurt you really bad. And I don't want to have to see that happen. You know, it's going to hurt me really bad to see that happen. And when she said that, man, and she was crying, and it crushed me. And I don't know what it was. I'm not a religious person at all, but something in me changed at that moment, and I needed to wake up. I knew I needed to wake up. Something needed to happen, and I needed to become more of an aware person and a more conscious person. And so that's what I wanted for myself. And when I was writing this record, I was searching to differentiate the true from the false within myself, which is extremely hard when you're a severely unconscious person and you've been lying to yourself for however long and lying to other people about this and that. And I started to realize things that happened to me at a young age and why I am the way I am. And I actually took a good hard look and an honest look. I was rigorously honest, which was extremely hard to do. I started to realize that I could not, at a young age, I was frightened and I was scared. And that was like causing me to have all these problems. And I carried all this stuff with me, just like everybody does, except I was less adult about it and didn't get a handle on it when I became an adult. Does that make sense?
Sure.
You know, I think most people are like, well, I'm an adult now, so I should get a handle on my stuff. Well, that never happened for me. That like emotional maturity was never there. So this record, you know, is sort of about relating to everybody and realizing that you're not, you know, I am as a person, I'm not unique and I'm not special in any way. And I've got, you know, my things to handle. And it has a bit of like sort of bringing awareness that everything is kind of in a state of a mess, you know. And people can bring themselves out of it. They just don't realize that they can.
What are you, 26?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have these realizations at your age? You're kind of ahead of at least one game.
I just think it was more of a, like, you better realize it or you're going to jail. Or yeah. you're gonna either hurt somebody or somebody's really going to hurt you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if it wasn't that drastic, I would never realize it. I would have kept going the way I was going. Because most people aren't as disturbed. Like, there's different levels of disturbances in people. Most people are fine. You know, they are disturbed, but they don't act out, you know, the way that I've acted out.
Right.
You know. Well, and when you've got the entire police department in downtown Florence chasing you, you know, you got to stop and ask yourself some pretty hard questions, you know.
What's that, two people, three people?
Four.
What are you going to do next?
We're going to do a song called Look How Far We've Come. Break your back on the slip of the tongue.
television selling this and that. Pretty women say I won't look like that. More than willing to pay all of that money, but he still won't stay. Little children, your father's scream. Every action like a puppy on the stream. The exact same.
Look how far we've come, Dylan LeBlanc, live in the Cafe Studios today. And, you know, being familiar with those Rough Trade records, one of the things I really like about this record is you can really understand your lyrics on this. You had a tendency in the past.
I think it's called
swallow
being intoxicated, maybe. I don't know. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
But was it a psychological thing? You didn't like the other lyrics, or
I think it was. I think I've just never been confident in my lyrics, mm-hmm. and that was one of the reasons why maybe I wouldn't pronounce them as well as maybe if I would sing a cover song, you know, because mm-hmm. I would often hear people say, "Man, we can understand you great when you sing that cover, but when you sing your own songs, we can't understand a word you're saying." So I think maybe subconsciously I was even doing it because I'd never noticed that my diction was that bad.
Mm.
And then, you know, even John Paul, when he was producing the record, he was like, you know, we're going to make sure that we can understand your words. That's one of the things we're going to do.
And live, you're definitely doing it too. So that's good.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to hone that in better. I'm trying to make sure that, you know, I think that just becomes with becoming more of a confident performer too in growing, you know, and I feel like I'm getting a little bit better. Just baby steps, you know, little progress, not perfection, but progress, you know.
You were talking about having to go out solo for a long, long time on those first couple of records, and I would think that would be deadly. That would just be really, really difficult.
It was rough. I'm not going to lie. It was just being, you know, traveling on a train or in a car by yourself is just a pain, you know, and it's painful, and you don't have anything to do. You're stuck there with your thoughts, and with a mind like mine, the last place I want to be is sitting somewhere by myself, which I've gotten better at being by myself as I've gotten older. But I hated it, you know, being alone.
But on stage too, right?
Yeah, and on stage it was like I would feel a disconnect with the audience, you know, because I would walk in there thinking, oh God, I'm just another guy with a guitar, and that's what they're thinking right now. Like, Jesus, we have to sit here and listen to this brooding songwriter singing his songs, and it's going to be painful, and wait for the headliner to come out. And I think that attitude I had going out into it, because that's probably what I would have been thinking, I think it did a lot of damage, you know, especially I think it hurt the shows, and I think it hurt things like, you know, conveying myself to the audience and trying to connect with them. I would just kind of shut that possibility off with that sort of attitude going into it, you know.
But this must be fun.
this is very much fun.
Yeah.
And I think it also becomes just being more of a, you know, you just get more, you try to be more of a professional. I never considered myself a professional. I just considered myself like, this is a hobby. I write songs and I like to do it, you know, and it's just something I do for fun, you know. But now I feel like this is the real thing, you know, and I need to see it through. I have a lot more invested in this record than I did with the other two, you know.
Dylan LeBlanc, our guest, and what do you want to finish up with?
I guess we'll do a jolly little number called I'm Moving On.
Live in the Cafe Studios today, Dylan LeBlanc, our guest. This is a real treat. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.